This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 36 with Stefan Seifert, founder of Pentimenti.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. I'm your host, J.C. Preston. I'm part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and, more importantly, connecting them with the resources and community they need to help share their message with others. This particular session is powered by Fizzle. Whether you're thinking of starting a business doing something you love or just want some honest feedback on what you're already doing, Fizzle has you covered. As a beginner, you can know that there's just so many things that you can have to be doing right now. For example, getting your first 1,000 raving fans, building a website, starting your podcast, even just getting to know people that are doing similar work. Because let's face it, you probably don't have that much support in this new endeavor of yours. That's where Fizzle's roadmap can help. From teaching you what you need to worry about at each step, it's a great tool to help you focus your attention on what you need to be doing right now. And on top of that, there is a huge library of videos that will help you along the way as you move from the phases of developing your clarity of what you're wanting to do, moving on to growing your business, and going on up through scaling. Even if you're an established entrepreneur, it's a really great place to meet people who are doing this whole online business thing. So if you're looking for a map to help you get profitable online or just want to get to know some really cool individuals, Fizzle is a great place to start. And today you can join at newinceptions.com/fizzle and get your first 2 weeks free. That's just long enough to try out one of their courses and get acquainted with the place. And again, that's newinceptions.com/fizzle. So, hey guys, hope you're having an awesome week. Again, thank you so much for tuning in wherever you are. I hope this is finding you in a good state of mind. And I hope you're seeing some improvement in your business this week. Whether you're out mowing the yard, in the gym, or driving down the road, I hope we can add something to your day and, your week. Some of you know that I'm part of the John Maxwell team, also known as JMT, and while I'm not necessarily a practicing member, as many are, I will say that I've met some really interesting people through it. Not to be oversaid, but when you go to a large event where other people like yourself go to, you get kind of thrown into a club, and while I met plenty of people at the JMT training event, I got connected to even more through Facebook once I got back home. Stefan was one of those first people that really struck a particular interest with me. Part of it was due to how close he was. I mean, there were only a handful of us in Indiana at the time, and he was just a state over in Illinois. However, I think the thing that really caught me about him, was that he saw coaching similar to how I see it, as a tool in your tool belt, not necessarily your main thing. So like me, he's been able to take what he's learned through the JMT and use it as just jet fuel to what he's already been doing, and which is essentially helping others take their business from good to great. And in this talk, we discuss how he started coaching, how it's helped him along the way, what his focus with... In this particular talk, we discuss how he started coaching in the first place, how using those skills have helped him in his career, what his focus with Pentimenti is, and some of the things that he's got going on the horizon. If you want to follow at home, you can do so via newinceptions.com/session36, and I'll be back after the conversation to fill anything we might have missed. Hey guys, just a heads up, just wanted to let you know that it's not you that might be hearing a little bit weirdness going on with my side of the conversation in this one. We had some weird technical difficulties that I tried to fix a little bit. My side was highly sped up and completely out of pitch, so this is the result of what I was able to do on the editing side. So I think you can still hear it, and yeah. We'll see you on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. It's me, JC, and I'm chatting with someone I really think you guys are going to get a lot of value out of with our discussion today. Stefan Seifert is the founder of Pentimenti. The name itself means alterations in a painting, evidenced by traces of previous work showing that the artist has changed his or her mind to the composition during the process of the painting. And actually, on his site, he has an example, which is pretty interesting. Growing up with the artistic influence, I was like, huh, I didn't know that had a name, but I've seen it before. But what that means in the business sense is that he helps you go from being self-employed business owner to a free and independent entrepreneur. And personally, this resonates with me quite a bit. I've seen numerous people start businesses, and then as the business grows, they don't realize how to shed some of the burden. You know, it consumes them. And what is it? I think Chris Ducker actually calls it Superman syndrome. As Robert Kiyosaki says, they own a job and not necessarily a business. And but we'll get more into that coming up here. But first, we'll just see how Stefan's doing. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great. It's a real privilege and honor to be here with you today, JC, and appreciate this opportunity to chat with you and share with your listeners.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the people that have been on my radar for quite a number of time. Just kind of seemed to be a pretty busy guy definitely more of an inspiration. One of the coaches that I've seen on my radar for a while that tends to be connecting with people pretty well. And recently, in last summer, you started this Pentimenti side of things and really kind of got interested in how that's all going. So, but we'll get into that here in a second. But, you know, the first thing, what's new in your world right now?
You know, it's an exciting time, but you mentioned the name of the business, and I realized just now when you were saying it that while when I discovered that term, I thought how appropriate it was for the business owners I work with as they kind of, you know, built their business, started painting it one way, and then realized, wait a minute, we can improve on this. Let's paint over what's already there and turn it from something that's good into something that's great. Let's take it from an okay painting into a masterpiece. But I realized that when you were just saying that just now, I thought, you know, that actually, it applies to what I've done too. And so you're right, this has kind of evolved and I've put a few layers of paint on it and to get it to the point where it is now. So it's pretty exciting time right now for me.
Oh yeah. No. So you're saying is that it wasn't because of your self-inflection, it was helping others, but at the same time, it actually fits yourself. That's cool. And in fact, it might actually a lot of your career, because what I noticed when I was looking into your history is that you got your BA in mass communication and sociology, and then a couple of years later you got your MBA. So kind of explain a little bit about, like, that, you know, as you were growing up, were you thinking about being someone on TV or what? I mean, how did you go from mass comm, and maybe even tell me a little bit about that degree, and then going into an MBA later?
Sure. Yeah, growing up, you know, I guess by the time I got through high school, I was like a lot of kids, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I knew I wanted to go to college, but I didn't really have a way to pay for it. And a friend was going into the Navy and using that to pay for college. And I thought, well, hey, that's great. That'll give me 4 more years to figure out what I want to do and a way to pay for it. So I did that. Truth be told, though, even 4 years later, when I was wrapping up my time on active duty the first time in the Navy, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. But, you know, at the time I was looking back and I thought, well, what am I good at? You know, what have I always shown an aptitude for? And it was always around language. It was always around writing, presenting, you know, creating, whether it was writing a report or a document, or that type of thing, interviewing people and extracting some really good ideas that they had and then writing it down putting it in a way that others could benefit from it and so forth. So I actually decided that that I wanted to, and like you mentioned, being on TV, that's funny that you mentioned that, because I actually have always enjoyed being on stage, being involved in theater, performing, anything with that, that type of thing. I was in some bands. I did a lot of shows, all kinds of different things. Man, everything from like doing puppet shows, you know, as a kid, to being, you know, pretending I'm a rock star and being in a band and then putting on plays and stuff like that. So yeah, so I kind of enjoyed all that stuff. And so I originally thought, well, I'm going to, you know, the most influential people in my life at that point had been my English teachers. And so I thought I'll just be an English teacher and do all that stuff. Got into undergrad, and about a semester in, I thought, yeah, you know, teaching's cool, but I actually want to do something that makes a bigger difference. So a journalism class really kind of changed that for me. So that's where the mass comm came in. I switched my degree over to journalism, and really kind of pursued that in a somewhat naive thinking that, you know, the media was pure and that, you know, you could go out and really make an impact on the world by being a journalist, and really kind of fell in love with the old school myth of journalism, and so kind of went that approach. And when I got into working in it a bit, I realized it wasn't quite what my romanticized version of it had been. And yeah, and I enjoyed the skills and all of it too. But right. You know, I kind of went into it following that approach and never really looked at what a career in that would pan out to be. And I thought at one point when I was looking at that, I realized you can be spending the next 20 years of your life working 70 hours a week to get paid peanuts and, you know, and barely get ahead, or you can look into applying the same skills you have in other areas and, you know, working more directly one-on-one with people who appreciate the value you bring. And so I started kind of at that point repainting, if you will, the canvas of what I was working on for my life. So kind of transition there.
Then you got your MBA, and while you were doing that, getting your master's there, you were an entrepreneurial marketing consultant. And that was, I'm guessing, your testing the waters of the business world. And really, did at that point, I mean, you had already made the decision that you were going to get your MBA. But how did you get into entrepreneurship in general?
Yeah, I had been working at a publishing company for a bit, and had, through that opportunity, had been a part of starting up some new initiatives within that company, starting up an entire new division, a new team, really going into a new market. And I thought that was really exciting, being a part of that, using new technology, and just, you know, even though we were a part of an existing company, we were kind of treated like a startup, like an offshoot. And that was really exciting. I learned a lot through that. And it started me thinking about really marketing. I started to see marketing in a whole new way. Whereas before, I'd kind of seen, you know, journalism as a pure thing and marketing as a, you know, manipulative thing of that. And I realized, no, that's not at all right. But I started to work a little closer with some of the marketers we had and learning from them, and realized that was a really interesting area of business, and wanted to pursue that and learn more about that, as well as really started to tap into, you know, some of the seeds of leadership that had been planted in me at an early age, and then through the military and so forth, and just really wanted to grow my influence in that aspect. You know, it's interesting that in undergrad, I really did a lot of work studying sociology as well. And it wasn't until much later that I realized that it kind of all tied together for me. But at the time, I didn't realize how that, you know, sociology, studying how groups of people behave and how they respond to different stimuli, different activities, and how much of that ties into marketing, because marketing is really, you know, looking at groups of people and figuring out how to communicate them in a way that influences how they act, which is tied into sociology. And then later realizing that's a big part of that is ties into leadership, you know, is the influence aspect of leadership. And so how they all tie together, I thought, was just kind of an interesting mix. So when I was in grad school, getting my MBA, my focus was in marketing. And then at that point, marketing and organizational health. And because I wanted to look at the marketing aspect of it, but I also wanted to understand inside an organization what drives performance, what makes a healthy organization, what makes a culture, what makes one place awesome to work and what makes another place terrible. And yet they can both produce the same, you know, same benefit or service to the customer, but do it in such different ways. And while I was in that program, a classmate of mine approached me with an idea that he had had for starting a business, really focused on startup companies in the research park. And so he came to me with this idea and said, you know, these companies, they have brilliant people working in them. A lot of them have these great technologies, and the minds behind them are, you know, some of the greatest engineering minds in the country. And they've got these great things to start up, but they don't understand the business side of it. And there's an opportunity there where they're not going to hire the big consulting companies. And yet they're not in a position yet to have their own internal executive team. And so he said, let's meet that need. You know, we can be a lower priced firm that can still meet that need and carve out a good business that way. And I said, yeah, why not? So we did that. And it was, it was literally, JC, it was literally going, some days we would literally go from class to meet with a client. And it was sometimes it was uncanny how sometimes it worked out where the questions they would ask would be something we just discussed in class, and literally hand to mouth, like regurgitating it back out. And we're just looking at ourselves like, this can't be real. You know, like we literally just learned this an hour ago and now we're getting paid to sell somebody else this. You know?
That's awesome.
It was a really cool experience. And probably my first real taste in any sort of entrepreneurial capacity. I mean, I'd always done had little side businesses. I'd done freelance work for a while, done some editing and ghostwriting, but my vision had always been for that to be some side work. It had never really been my primary focus. So that was really my first real taste in that. And I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. It was a really neat business model. And we met a lot of great business people through that and helped them get their businesses off the ground. It was really rewarding, really fun.
Cool. So right after that, you graduated, and then you kind of kept on doing that for a bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So again, you were doing all kinds of different services and coaching and just continuing on. And did you stick work with the same partner that you had in school, or did you do your own thing, or how did that work?
Yeah, he actually we had one client that we were doing, and this is actually one of the things that I teach people now. We kind of got to business where it was the two of us, and we had another partner who was a sort of a partial partner. He had another business of his own already that he continues to have to this day, but we needed him to kind of come in and help us with the finance side of things. So he was sort of a part-time partner, and so it was really kind of the two and a half of us. But my other friend and I, we kind of led the bulk of it. And after doing it for a while, we were really good friends, and we kind of reached a point where we had different visions for where it was going. And honestly, I think I wasn't quite ready for it yet. I was in that stage where it was a little new to me, and it was fun and exciting, and it was cool. But when it kind of came down to, you know, going into a client meeting, my mindset was in a way in a place where I would be thinking like, wow, we've got to get this deal, or, you know, how am I going to pay for the house this month? And, you know, as you know, that's just when you're in that mindset, whether you verbalize it or not, somehow, you know, the client picks up on that through your body language or whatever, and the desperation just oozes, and it's just not a very good, you know, it doesn't lead to much. And so, I think our comfort level was different too. I was married and wanting to start a family. He was still single, so it was kind of a point where I wasn't ready for it yet, and we just had different levels with that. So we kind of looked at it and we said, you know, our friendship means more than this business, and so we decided to kind of shut that down. But at the same time, we had kind of gotten into one of the traps. We'd kind of gotten ourselves into one of the traps that I help other business owners with now, is that we had become very dependent on really one key customer. And we had a few side projects that we were working on and helping some others, but the bulk of our business was coming from one customer. And that made us really vulnerable. And at a certain point, they actually made an offer to my partner to hire him into their company. And, it was kind of one of those, this is a really good opportunity, you're a good fit, and it was the best thing for him. And so I encouraged him to do it. And really kind of that was the bigger crux. It just kind of helped everything else at the same time that was coming to a head, so it was just kind of a, okay, yeah, let's do this. And all of those things kind of lined up. So he went that direction, and I still had another contract I was working on that I moved forward with for a little while. And it was just kind of the right time to change direction. So, once again, I had the canvas in front of me and started repainting it again. So it was a real big learning process and a really good experience to have to learn from those lessons too. I think you find that anybody who's got a business that they're successful at, hopefully they've had one that they failed at in the past. And, it's one of those things you don't wish on anyone, but my goodness, the lessons that come out of it, it's kind of like, I think of, like with my, I've got a daughter now and she's really young, but I've got some nieces who are college age now. And I would never wish for them to have their heart broken in a relationship. But at the same time, I do hope they have that experience, because when you go through the low of something like that, you appreciate the high of it so much more. And so it's kind of one of those things like, for a business owner to have only met success in their business, I don't think that helps shape them to become the best leader or business owner that they can be. It's you sometimes have to have those, those heartbreaks and those failures in order to shape yourself into something better.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just being perpetually on a runway, so to speak, it kind of gets you into that situation too, I think.
That's true. That's true very often, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So when you were kind of going back, do you remember how you got your first clients?
We were at the University of Illinois, and so there was the research park right there in the park, and we just kind of went through and made some introductions to some people who were running they had an incubator as part of the research park, so where the really, really early stage startups were, and we just kind of met some of the people leading the research park initiatives and the incubator. Did a couple presentations, started, talking to some venture capitalists in the area and some local business leaders who were involved with that, and just kind of sharing with them our ideas. And they started introducing us to either companies they were invested in or owners that they had connections to. And, some of those became clients. Some of them just gave us really good advice. Some of them looked at us like we were crazy, and, that was okay too. It was interesting. One of the things we ran into was, people, looking at us like, why should we listen to what you guys have to say? You're so young, and we weren't nearly as young as we looked. And so it was one of those weird times where it's like, no, really, we're not as young as you think we are. And just because he's got a baby face and, whatever. But yeah, it was just one of those funny things where I sensed that being younger was actually a challenge at that time for some people with it, but no, it was really just through the old fashioned, making introductions and listening to what their needs were and offering to help them on something. Sometimes we'd offer just a small little project just to kind of introduce ourselves to them, and then when they'd see what we could do with that, they'd say, "This is interesting. This is good. Let's talk about what else you can do for us." Okay. And kind of being patient with that.
Didn't know if you're kind of doing like a tiered sort of thing or not, but that's okay. Yeah, that's cool.
No, it was more of a classic, really consulting model. My partner had come from a consulting background at one of the larger consulting firms, so I really just kind of followed his lead on that, and it was really built on a you know, let's sit down with you, discuss what your problem is, and then we'll put a proposal together and negotiate out the terms and the deliverables and really kind of customize to each situation.
Okay, cool, cool. So eventually, during this coaching time, during the latter part of it, because you went, you finished grad school in what, 07, 08, or 06?
I was 06. And so around 07 is when we made we started actually in the summer between our 2 years of the MBA program. And so the second year, like I said, was just crazy running from the class obligations we had and to our clients. And then we continued it into 2007. And that's when we kind of split, and I continued to go with it for a bit with one of the other contracts I had. And then just kind of started looking at how I wanted to reshape it. And so then for a few years, I actually had a contract with the university where I was helping with just some communications work, marketing, business analysis work, really just focused, you know, on work with the university. And I knew that was only a temporary thing. In fact, when I first started, I thought, okay, this will be for the next year while I figure this out. Well, that stretched out and stretched out and stretched out, and you know, kind of became comfortable. So it really became no different than having a job, and ended up basically having a job for the university on a contract. And then at some point, I was getting really kind of frustrated and stagnant and really disengaged with it. Kind of went through that whole period of disengagement and not sure where things were going to go next, kind of feeling a bit lost and a bit devalued, not sure what to do. And, you know, started figuring out, like, you know, what's next? Is there something that's next? And it was kind of a challenge, you know, that disengaged feeling. That's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about creating workplaces that are awesome. Is because I've gone through that feeling of complete disengagement in your work. And it's scary to me that, you know, depending on which report you look at, somewhere between 76 and 86% of our workforce is disengaged at some level. And that just blows my mind. It's terrifying because those people are just going through their lives and they're not showing up. They're not expressing their creativity. They're not expressing their full potential. And it's because of the environments we create for them. And that just makes me sad, you know.
Cubicle farms do not help.
No, and you know, when I think about that, really on a national level, you know, America's in a pretty good place. You know, not where we once were, but we're in a pretty good place overall. But that means we're only applying 15% of our potential in the workforce. Now, what could happen if we could even just turn that up to 50%, just by changing the culture and giving people that opportunity? So that's kind of one of the big things that drives me now. And I guess really that's kind of what led me to, again, seeking out my personal growth and development and wanting to learn more about leadership and so forth. Kind of, and that's where, you know, led me to finding the John Maxwell team, which is, you know, how we met. So.
Right. And how has that helped your business?
You know, that's really, it was the right time. I mean, it really kind of ignited that spark in me again and reminded me that you do have, you know, you do have value. You do have something that you can offer other people that will help them as well. And started getting me out of that kind of dark funk I was in, and started making me think bigger again about what can you do and what impact can you have. And so that's kind of where it took on more of a general coaching focused on the leadership aspect of things. And but it was really broad. You know, it was really one of those everybody could use leadership development. So. But if you're serving everybody, you're serving nobody. And so it was really hard to build that business because I didn't have it focused. I didn't have it narrowed down to where, you know, where if you asked me, you know, Stefan, who, you know, if I run into somebody and they say, oh, I've got this problem with this, you know, who are they that I know to refer them to you because you're the go-to guy for this? I didn't have that. And so it was really kind of just this general broad leadership thing. And you know, did a few events with that, hosted a few simulcasts and did a few of my own events with that, and it was good, but it was a process. So I just, you know, it was another version of the painting. And
right, well, and the way I look at it is it's another tool, you know, on your tool belt, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's really kind of how I use it more today, is that the leadership aspect of it, what I started doing what I started doing is I realized that, you know, a lot of times you talk to somebody about leadership and they kind of get that look in their eyes that's sort of, yeah, I know what that is, but I don't quite know what it is, but I know it's good stuff and I got to get me some of it. Yeah, but they don't really, that's kind of, and then they don't want to ask because it's kind of embarrassing to say, I'm not quite sure what leadership is or how to develop it, you know? And so it was kind of this odd little thing. So I started looking for a way. I thought, what if there was a way to really ground this, to really show a measurable return on the investment in developing your leadership, to really tie it into your business and say, this is what happens when you develop as a leader. This is what the measure is on your business. And so I started to explore that and look into what was out there and really kind of try to put, and originally my thinking was, you know, I'm going to put my own model around this. And I sort of did, but as I realized, you know, why reinvent the wheel? And so I started to look at what was out there and what other people were finding. And that's really kind of what led me to John Warlow. He's a Canadian guy who's authored a few books, but the two key ones are Built to Sell and The Automatic Customer. Mm. And what he had done through his work was he and his team had found that there really were, you know, 8 key drivers of business value, and put together kind of a system of developing those areas so that it can free the owner from the business while improving the value of the business. And when I looked at this, I thought, here it is. Here's a measurable, quantifiable system that you can replicate and apply to a business. And when you pair that with coaching, implementation coaching around it, and then build leadership into it, a lot of what I saw that you were doing is you're not just building the value of the business, but you're actually building a culture where your employees are able to thrive. And when they thrive, you're able to work on the business instead of in it, and your business can thrive without you. So it really became this, you know, I remember what I said was, man, this is a masterpiece. This is the masterpiece model right here, you know? And that's kind of where the whole reframing of my business into recalling it Pentimenti began, because I realized that, you know, this is taking a rough draft, a pencil sketch, and turning it into the Mona Lisa. And if you apply all of these things, and you know, if you don't apply all of them, you can still apply, you know, 3, 4, 5 of them, whatever, and it'll make a significant impact on your business. And so I knew that that's where it would ground my coaching and it would ground the leadership. So now what I, like you said, it's a tool in the tool bag. The leadership aspect is now woven into everything I do, but it's woven into it. It's done in a way of, you know, in order to implement this strategy and reach these objectives, how do you need to grow as a leader? And what culture do you need to create in your business? And so it's really still driving those two things, but it's in a far more tangible a way of doing it than an abstract, you know, what you typically get when you know, leadership, culture, coaching. Oh, those are great vague, you know, concepts. But this really kind of ties it down and anchors it in something that's measurable, strategic, it's proven, and you know, you can start seeing real results from. So I loved how I could marry those two, the big kind of the big picture, all the way down to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, out of those, you said there was 10 key drivers?
Yeah, John Warlow identifies 8. The 8 key drivers. And I kind of tease him like I tell him that he missed 2, you know, because there's the 8 that he identified, but the other 2 are the what I mentioned that I kind of weave into it all as overlying things, where the leadership aspect is certainly critical, as John Maxwell says, you know, everything rises or falls on leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly true. So each of those 8 drivers, if it's going to take developing leadership to get those in place. And then the organizational health, the culture, you know, what's making this an awesome place to work, what's allowing the employees to engage, the team, actually, I say more than employees, because, you know, the workplace is changing where we're having, we're going to have more and more businesses that don't actually have employees. They just have teams, you know, teams of independence. So I kind of say teams, but, you know, still giving your team an opportunity to thrive and engage is going to be what propels these other 8, the other 8 areas forward. So that's why I say there's 10.
Okay. So, again, going back real quick, I mean, this thing called a culture, there's a lot of companies that struggle with developing cultures. And, you know, I've noticed that, you know, if you look at, for example, Omni Hotels, which is where my wife has worked in the past, that they have a huge culture, right? And I think that they kind of, like, I know that Maxwell has worked with the Ritz, right? I believe hotels.
I think so.
You know, they have huge standards of how things are done. And then likewise, you know, if we're talking about still cultures, you look at Google, you look at Apple, you look at, I mean, they have particular cultures as well. But a lot of companies, you know, I've seen and heard that it just, because especially the larger the company gets, the more whatever culture might have existed at the beginning, surely it doesn't transcribe to the larger company, especially if it's something that they've never talked about before.
Yeah. And I think that last part is key, right? If they've never talked about it, and so many times a business will grow, and especially, you know, even when it's a small business, when it goes from being a solopreneur going to now I've got, you know, two or three people on my team. Now we're going into 5 to 7 to 8 or whatever. When it starts that small, it's sort of an unspoken thing, but it never gets kind of written down or stand, you know, and it's hard to multiply that out as the business grows into something larger. And you know, you look at like businesses like Amazon, right? One of the best performing businesses out there. And yet the culture there, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't like it. It's a very, very hard driving culture and has a high burnout or whatever. And then you look at places, you know, Google or Zappos before it was bought. You know, the cultures of a place like Tom's. Tom's is another great example. It has a culture all its own, you know. Mm-hmm. And the truth of it, I think, JC, is that every business has a culture. You know, we all do. Every community, you know, we have an environment. We have our environment. We have a culture. It's there, whether we're intentional about it or not. And you know, the famous quote about it is, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. You know, so you know, we focus so much on strategy. I mean, every business I know, and the bigger the business becomes, they focus on strategies. They've got, you know, strategies at every level over the organization. But you're right. A lot of times they don't talk about culture, and they expect it to just happen. And it's no different than strategy. It doesn't happen. It'll happen, whether or not you're guiding it. The problem is that, you know, if you're not guiding it and you're not intentional about it, you can create a real monster. And then once the monster's created, and the bigger that monster gets, it's harder to change. And you know, that's where we see so many business cultures where there's a huge, huge lack of trust. People who are positioning, you know, competing within internally, power grabbing, but really a big lack of trust, a lack of vulnerability, lack of authenticity. And I think that, you know, if we can build that into place, and the companies that you see that have these awesome cultures, they're typically united around a very central purpose, a real right. big purpose and mission that they're on, that everybody in the company knows, they bought into, that's part of it, you know, and that sort of becomes the guiding aspect for it.
Hmm. Yeah. Have you seen The Intern yet, by any chance?
No, I haven't.
You need to check that out. That's one that I'm talking to a lot of people about seeing recently.
Is that the one where Robert De Niro is the older guy, and he goes back and does an internship with a younger woman?
That whole scenario where, you know, he comes from a company that definitely had a culture that was much different than the culture that was at this new business. I forget how long that she had been running. I think it was a couple of years, but it literally exploded. And, you know, I would imagine that the kind of the counseling and the what he's able to offer her throughout the movie is kind of how I could see you being able to influence maybe the maybe the person that has kind of, you know, started this thing from scratch and it just kind of blew out of proportion, and, or not necessarily blew out of proportion, but blew up so quickly that they, you know, they're still trying to do all the different things. And yeah, it's, you just kind of gave me a vivid picture of, it was like, oh, he's kind of describing what that movie is kind of about. So yeah.
Yeah. I'll definitely have to check it out. I have a almost 3-year-old girl, so we haven't been out to the movies very much. We actually got excited last week. We saw that the next Jason Bourne movie is coming out at the end of July. So we're like, oh my gosh, we finally have a, and then when we do get a chance to go out to a movie, we can't agree on what to see. So we were finally excited to have a movie we both agreed on going to see. So
Yeah. Well, I think there was another one that's kind of Disney related, the Hunter, Snow White, I think, is coming out with a prequel or something like that. And I kind of interesting. I know my wife's really big into it. We ended up watching something called Crimson Peak last night, which, you know, it's funny how the trailers will always strike your attention of it being a cool movie, and then when you actually see it, it's like, eh.
No, my world's more about I've watched a ton of Lion King and the Lion Guard show lately, and little animated shows like that, and I actually caught myself the other day thinking, you know, Anna's not that bad of a princess. She could actually be one of my favorite Disney princesses. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm actually thinking about ranking Disney princesses. What's going on here? You know, it's so funny.
Well, I'm not too off from that. I mean, you look at the Disney Channel and what it was when, you know, we were growing up versus what it is now, and especially the fact that they have what is it, one of the shows that we watch on there is Girl Meets World, and kind of paying still attention to Cory and Topanga, you know, from when we were growing up a bit, anyway, at least that's my generation. But yeah, I mean, getting back into things here a little bit, like, you tend to work more one-on-one with people, right?
Yeah, I like to really do things. There's such a value to being connected in a community of like-minded people and having that observational learning aspect of it. So, you know, when you hear what another business owner is doing, you're like, oh wow, you know, for one, I'm not alone in this, but also, wow, that's a brilliant idea. And we, a lot of times, you know, we all like to think, oh, my business is different. But really, when it comes down to it, you know, we could be talking to somebody who works in a whole different business and learn from what they're doing and apply it in our business. And it, you know, it could be something as different as, you know, somebody who has a cleaning business or a lawn care business, and we're doing, you know, financial reports for businesses, or, you know, whatever it is. And it could be, you know, accounting or whatever. And you, on the surface, you'd think, wow, these businesses are nothing alike. Mm-hmm. But really, when you get down below the surface, we're all people, and we're all, you know, dealing in business. And that's that sociological aspect of it coming in again, right? I mean, there's still things that we can learn from one business that we apply in another. So what I really like to do is, I really like to bring groups of owners together in a group where they can share with each other, learn from each other, and have that observational learning and that sort of shared experience aspect of it too. So I do a lot of work with a group aspect to it. The other thing that does is the culture that I intentionally create in a group. It starts to, in a sort of a subconscious way, leak over into the businesses, you know, where how we treat each other. And it shows owners that, my goodness, you can actually be vulnerable and share something about your business, and you won't be, you know, ostracized for it. You'll actually be supported by it from other business owners and so forth. And it gives them a community where they can, you know, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, it's a really tough and lonely existence sometimes, because who are you going to talk to? You know, who are you going to go to? You're not going to talk to your employees about some of the challenges you're facing, because they're depending on you for their livelihood. Yeah, they're looking at you to answer, not to ask the questions. And you know, you're certainly not going to come home and talk to your partner and your kids about it, because they're looking at you kind of the same way. Like,
to know all those answers.
You know, take care of it. You know,
that's your department. This is us.
Exactly. And a lot of times you find too, when an entrepreneur has a partner or a spouse, a lot of times, you know, we're attracted to the opposite. And so where we kind of have that roller coaster ride enthusiasm, we just want to rush out and get on the ride and go. We kind of have that partner who likes things more grounded and stable and at least wants the illusion of that. So we sort of have to create that, right? So so you can't go home and talk to them. So who do you talk to, right? And it's really nice to have a, and you're not going to talk to your competitors, you know, in most cases, because, you know, you just give them your great idea and they squashed you with it. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of, so having a group where people are like-minded and supported and it's safe is really invaluable. So I try to really make the group aspect of it the basis of everything, and I include that aspect. Anytime I work with somebody one-on-one, they're also part of a group. But yeah, so I do the higher, you know, one-on-one, we'll go through and really look at your business and find which drivers of value we want to, which levers we want to pull and in what order, and the best way forward to for you to implement that. And that's, you know, that's at that level, and that includes the group level. But I also have people who are involved at the group level still getting, mm-hmm. you know, the quality information, still implementing it, just not as much of a one-on-one support level of it. So so yeah, mix of group and one-on-one.
And generally speaking, I mean, how do you meet these folks? I mean, do you go to Rainmaker sort of stuff, or?
You know, I one of the things that I was really wanting to be intentional about it in repainting my business, recreating it, was I didn't want it to be geographically bound. I really, you know, today's day and age, the technology and everything, I thought, you know, I really want to shape a business that my team can be anywhere and our customers can be anywhere. And if, you know, if I'm meeting with a customer and I'm, you know, hey, we're going to go to the Caribbean this week, that's fine. You know, you can do that. If we decide to pick up and move to another part of the country, it doesn't affect anything, you know? And so I really focused on building it that way. So that's kind of how I'm really kind of meeting people is through a kind of a mix of strategies. There's, you know, through LinkedIn, being active in LinkedIn and doing a couple strategies in LinkedIn, through some direct marketing approaches and some a little bit of Facebook, but not Facebook like Facebook. It's really kind of a LinkedIn like in some ways it's how LinkedIn should be. It's finding the right groups on Facebook that are business focused groups to be a part of, you know, and then using Facebook advertising in a good way. And then, yeah, so some direct marketing and then just being involved in some different groups and finding where people are who resonate with, and then doing some webinars, doing some things like that. I will eventually add more. I used to do quite a bit more speaking. I'll do some more speaking soon. I just kind of tailored that way back because I want to be home with my daughter. But I'll probably start mixing that in, you know, maybe, you know, one trip a month or once every 2 months or so, go to some events and do some stuff like that. Yeah, but I would say the online outreach, really virtual outreach, you know, and some direct marketing principles have been really the key to introducing myself to new markets. Some of that with some JV partnerships, you know, finding the right people who already have, you know, like in my case, a business attorney is a great partner. An accountant who serves, you know, business owners, they can make some awesome introductions for me. So I can add some value to their client base. I can do, like, you know, I'll do a webinar teaching some of these principles of these eight values and stuff. And I'll do that for, you know, for them, you know, just add value to their customers as a way of getting introduced to them. And then some of them will say, you know, hey, I'd really like to learn more. This is great, great information, great content. How can I, you know, dig deeper on it? And then we'll move them forward through that too. So.
Cool. Yeah. It's amazing what the online world will open up anymore.
It's changing everything. I kind of like to follow some of these people who kind of predict the changes in the workforce and so forth. And in some ways, you know, getting the right culture in place also means, you know, I mean, the days of coming to work and working at a place for 20 years, 30 years are for the most part long gone. There's still, you know, higher education is a holdout on that and a couple other places. But, you know, that's changing so much to where, you know, there's a lot of people predicting that in the future, it'll be virtual teams. It'll be like, you won't even be employees. You'll have, you know, somewhere around 50% of the workforce will be independents who form up for ad hoc teams, work on stuff for a bit, and maybe they reform as a team again, the same people, or just some subtle changes. It's it's really going to change, and a lot of the
well, and I've been looking at that since grad school myself. That it seems that everybody's going to be heading towards being their own consultant, you know, in a way.
And if you think about it, it's kind of a return, right? I mean, it used to be like that. It used to be before the industrial age. It was everybody, you know, you had your trade that you were skilled in. You know, you were a farmer, you were a carpenter, you were a banker, a store clerk, you know, whatever it was, you had your trade, and likely a trade that you inherited from your father, you know. everybody kind of had their specialty, they had their trade, and everybody was in business for themselves, and they might form partnerships or work together on some stuff or form a network of people in similar businesses, and you know, that's kind of how a lot of it evolved. And then the industrial age said, no, we need people to be like machines, and we just need to plug you in, and in exchange for that, we'll give you a false sense of security in your job. Trust us to lead the company. Just show up, do your work that we trained you to do. You know, the whole idea of unskilled labor. I hate that. It's like, no, that everybody has the skill. You're just not applying it in the right area. You haven't found it, or you're not. And so that goes back to the culture thing, right? And giving people an opportunity to find what it is that they can actually, you know, excel in, that they can shine and really engage in. And if we can get people to engage in, they're probably going to be a little bit more independent minded. But how do we lead that so that we can still form cohesive teams of independently operating people who are just, you know, excelling in their area of giftedness, and move that to where the entire operation is so much more productive and we're tapping into more of our potential, and doing so in a way that the individuality is not lost, I think is what we're really going to see a shift in. So we just took that up to the 30,000 foot level.
I know. Yeah. Funny how conversationals roll like that. Real quick. I mean, I've noticed throughout this conversation that you have a definite why. I mean, it's your family, obviously. And when I was active in Amway, there was a saying that we use quite a bit, and it's like, don't let your family be an excuse and let them be a reason to build your business. And you can see that a lot of successful entrepreneurs are able to do that. Outside of my Amway group in particular, I saw Pat Flynn early on. You know, he makes it very obvious that his time and his family are really, really important to him. In fact, he does most of his work before they get up and after they go to bed. And there's another guy that you might have heard his TED talk, Simon Sinek, that talks about how, you know, the bigger companies, that they perform so well because they have that why figured out. I mean, you look at Apple and what sets them apart from like a Dell that you don't really hear anything about anymore. I don't even know if they're, I think they'll still exist. But it's the reason that Apple has a why. And do you feel that what you're doing now gives you more time for your why?
Absolutely. And it's such a great question. And it's so important. You know, if you haven't read that book, you read that. I've read that Simon Sinek book, Start With Why. I've read it, I think, at least four or five times. I know I've given at least a dozen copies away. And we had an opportunity, a group of us through the John Maxwell team, to work with him and his team a few years ago, actually. And they have a sort of a little online course that you can do to help work through your why. And so we got to work directly with his team, and we were kind of their guinea pigs on that. And so we kind of helped them work out some kinks and you know, became able to actually facilitate the course for others now. So it's not a big part of what I do, but every now and then when I find somebody who's really struggling with that, we'll take a break and we'll actually go through that process of, you know, really reconnecting with what's your, you know, soul level, your deeper level, what's, you know, your big level. And one of the things I've learned from that is that sometimes we make it bigger than it needs to be. I mean, it's great to have a big why, but sometimes we think, oh my gosh, this has to be like my whole purpose for living and for the rest of my life and everything. And you know what? It really doesn't. It's your why for today. You know, start with today. What's your why? What's driving you for today? And, you know, in my case, I mean, ever since my daughter arrived in my life, I mean, it's been all about her. In fact, the other day I told her, I said, and just, you know, it's so funny, the conversations you have with a three-year-old and a near three-year-old. And so I'm sitting there pouring my heart out to her and telling her, you know, yeah, everything I do is for you, baby. It's all because I want, you know, to be able to give you this experience and open doors for you. And, you know, it's like, it's all for you. And kind of explaining a couple things to her. And she's listening, and then she looks up at me and she goes, you need to shave. And I just love that, right? Like, she'll listen, and then, and so you think, like, oh man, none of that, you know, what am I thinking? She's only three. Like, none of that, like, resonated at all, you know? And then I'll hear her later on, like, in her tub, and she'll be playing with her toys or something, and she'll be like, you know, I'm doing this for you, and it's very important. And, you know, and it's like, oh, she is picking up on this. This is cool, you know? So it's just kind of fun. Yeah. But, yeah, I've been very intentional about that, and sometimes it's a struggle. I say I put Fort Knox. I figured out, man, we kind of lie to ourselves with our kids. You know, you hear people say, you've got 18 years with them. And that's a big lie. You know, you've got 5 years before they start school. And when they start school, they start getting involved with so much with their friends and their activities and stuff that's not your time anymore. You're there, you know, to clothe and feed and transport them and hopefully have, you know, day-to-day influence on their life. But that's not your time. And then when I started breaking that down even further, I thought, and even before then, you know, you're working. So you've got on a work day, you've got, you know, the morning is typically your rush. It's just a get everybody ready and out the door. And then the evening, by the time if you have dinner and you got the pre-bedtime stuff and all that, and if you got bath night or whatever, I mean, that can all be fun stuff. But you're really looking at, you know, 2, maybe 3 hours of quality time a day with a kid. And I thought, no, this is too important. So I was real intentional about, I say I put Fort Knox around that. So, like, there is nothing that breaks through that time. I could have, you know, $1 million opportunity, and I'd say, sorry, you got to schedule it around that because that's her time. And so I think being very clear on what that why is for you, whether it's your family or whether it's something else, that just gives you that sense of direction, and it makes decision making so much easier. You know, so I found that to be a critical piece of moving forward. Otherwise, it's so easy to misplace it. I mean, you know, it's so easy to think, oh, I can just do this for, I'll just spend a couple minutes on it. And next thing you know, the whole evening shot by and you didn't even see, you know, your family or friends or kids or whatever. And it's still a struggle. I mean, I don't keep in touch with my friends as much as I'd like. My former business owner, he's my daughter's godfather. We're still great friends to this day. And, you know, we would love to be in touch more. It's still a struggle. Even, you know, like right now I'm launching something new. I'm getting ready to launch something new. And so my mind is on that. And so it's harder to be present. You know, I'll catch myself in the evening with her, and I'm with her. But sometimes, you know, you go through these little phases where it's like, wait a minute, I'm not being fully present. I'm thinking about this. Let me put that on back, you know, and let me get back to being here with her, you know. So it is a challenge. But I think having that clarity on your why is it helps so much with to catch yourself in that moment and then not judge yourself, but just be like, hey, you know, that's cool. I'm glad that I have the awareness that I caught that. Now, what am I going to choose to do about it? And then move on. You know, it's the 80-20 principle, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think going back to what we've been talking about, you know, including culture and everything like that, is that, you know, if you figure out what your why is, you know, then you can kind of, you know, again, looking at Apple was Steve Jobs, you know, but it was because he was very focused on what he was trying to achieve over the years that he was part of it. And I would imagine that anybody else that has their why figured out, that, you know, it's just going to make their not only their life, but, you know, well, not only their business, but their life, you know, that much better, because all the machines are working in the same direction, so to speak.
Yeah. And, you know, Apple's such a great, they always get praised and they're such a good example of all the stuff, but it, you know, the funny thing is, I mean, I don't think I own a single Apple product, but the company is such a great model because of what everything they've gone through. You look at that, you know, Steve Jobs defined the mission, the why. He was the driving force behind it. He created the culture, and he did such a good job of scaling it because he was so powerful at driving that. You know, Richard Branson's another good example of that. And you know, the folks at Southwest Airlines, I mean, they've got that culture nailed down, you know. And, but, you know, then you look at Apple, and when Steve left, it fell apart. They became just like every other tech company, and it fell apart. And then when he came back, he was able to restore it. And I think that him going away is actually what saved it, because when he came back, he had that understanding, and he started to think about, what do we need to put in place in this company so that when I go away again, it survives. And I think that that's really what saved it. And you see it has. I mean, it's, you know, they started to be intentional about that stuff. And what does life without Steve look like? And fortunately, because, you know, they did that, because unfortunately we lost him way too soon. So
yeah, he was a really interesting guy. It's I've seen the first movie on the Jobs with Ashton Kutcher, and still looking to do the documentary.
Yeah, I've got them both on my DVR.
Yeah,
they're on my I'll watch them eventually list.
So let's get into the rapid fire questions right now, because
yeah, you sound fun.
the hot seat. And again, these are
and this is the challenge for me, because you can tell I give short answers, so this is going to be really a challenge for me.
So the first one is: what are three truths that you've found out over the years that you'd want to share with others?
Oh man, this is a good one. I think first and foremost, I would say stop worrying or thinking about what other people think about you, because the truth is they're not. They're just not. You know, why worry about what the neighbors think? They're not. They're thinking about themselves. And even when, and this is the tricky part, right? Even when you ask somebody, well, what do you think about this? You know, JC, I'm thinking about launching this new thing. What do you think? And this is a knock on you. I'm just using this example, but you know, I'm thinking about launching this. What do you think? Right? Your response, most likely. Now you might be different, because you're a skilled coach and you've got that, you know. But most people, when you ask them that, the response you're going to get is going to be their response into what does it mean to them? How does that threaten their status quo? What mirror does that hold up to them? So if you say, I'm going to start this business, yeah, but what does that mean to me? I don't, that's risky. I don't like that. That scares me. And then everything of the response is based on them, not on you. So let go of worrying about what other people think about you, because they're not, would be number one. Number two would be to let go of perfection. Perfection is an unrealistic pursuit, and it's unattainable, and it just slows you down. Done is better than perfect. Just get stuff out there. People need to hear it from you. You need to shine, and you need to shine your light into dark places. And it doesn't need to be perfect. You know, just get it done. I was in a conversation the other day with somebody, the musician guy is amazing, and we talked about the difference between Boston and the Beatles. The Beatles released, I think it was the Beatles released 24. I might be a little off on this, but 28. The Beatles released 28 albums in something like 7 or 8 years. 14 albums in the first 2 years, 10 in the second, studio albums. And Boston, it took Tom Scholz 5 years just to perfect and write one song, Peace of Mind. It took, you know, by the time from their first album to their second was 2 years. But every Boston album after that took like 8 years, and the last one took 11 years, because Tom was pursuing perfection. Now, I love Boston. I mean, Boston makes incredible music. But when you look at that, you know, was it something like, I had it written down there, it's like, you know, they did like 6 albums over 32 years. The Beatles did, you know, 28 albums over 7 years. Which band do we know every single member's name of? You know, so the thing is, that first Boston album, it is perfect. In fact, my wife says she can't stand listening to them because they are so perfect. but you look at that, yeah. It's the only album I know of that every song on it is still played on the radio 40 years later. But here's the thing. If you can hit perfection, that's awesome. But what's the likelihood? Wouldn't it be better to be the Beatles and just get a ton out there? And not all of it will be great. People won't love it all, but, you know, I love John Lennon, the story about John Lennon. They sit down to write a song, and John says, let's write a swimming pool. Yeah, let's go write a swimming pool. I'm doing an extension on my house. I want a swimming pool. Let's write a swimming pool. You know, and all of a sudden help comes out, you know, and it's like, hey, you know, it's cool. So I know this is supposed to be a quick answer. Sorry. But yeah, so stop worrying about what other people think. Get things out. Done is far better than perfect. And I think the third would be, you know, kind of going back to what we said. There's only one person that you ultimately are accountable to and have to answer to, and that's the face you look in the mirror. So do the hardest work of looking within and going within and discovering who you are and what matters to you, and then live your life by that.
Powerful. next question is, what are three of your favorite teachers and or influencers, and these can be creative, business, or anything that influenced you over the years?
Man.
Three, huh?
I mean, we mentioned Maxwell and John Warlow and Simon Sinek, so I won't mention them. And, you know, when I look from pop culture, I mean, I've always been attracted to, like, the rebels, you know, like, fictional characters or even real characters that we have fictionalized, like Billy the Kid and Batman and stuff like that. I mean, I like these kind of these rebel types. But I think when it comes to business, I would say, and more recently in the last few years, I would say Patrick Lencioni has been a huge influence. I love his book, Getting Naked. That to me is the ultimate culture book on what a business should be like. Now he focuses on a consulting type business, but you can take those principles and apply it anywhere. And all of his work is outstanding. Dan Kennedy, GKIC, direct response marketing king. You know, you see all these guys out there now, and they're doing these things. And every time I hear them, I'm like, yeah, that's what Dan Kennedy taught you. That's what Dan Kennedy taught you. You know, and not to take anything away from them, but Dan is like the godfather of that. And of course, it goes back from him to Gary Halbert and others. But yeah, for me personally, it's been Dan Kennedy, Patrick Lencioni. And then more recently, I've been working with really closely with Ryan Levesque. He's less known, but he's got a great book called Ask. So yeah, so Ryan's a great guy. I've actually, just in the last few months, been working closely with him and his team. And he's just got a really great thing going there. The Ask formula takes a lot of these direct marketing principles and the psychology behind things and the neuroscience and how people respond to, you know, things. And it really ties it all together in a way that makes more sense than anything I've seen before, because it taps into things and gives you a method that you can apply in your business to understand your market better, communicate with them better, serve them better, and thereby make your business better. And so I've been doing a bit of work with him closely over the last few months, and it's just a really good program. He's got a really good system and an outstanding team, and he's got a group of business owners together that has a great culture too. So I'm really liking what he's got going there.
Cool. Yeah, I heard of him on Pat Flynn's podcast, and he had him on there, and I have the book, and
it's a short book, isn't it? But it's one of those books that you look at and you're like, oh, this is a light little short book, you know, and half of it's just a story, so you're like, oh, how much can you get out of this? But it is huge, man. It's like one of those that, like, you know, it's kind of like you don't be deceived by it, you know. And I mean, you know, Think and Grow Rich is what, you know, 60 some pages or whatever, but man, is it a monster of a book, you know. And it's like every line is gold, and you know, Ask may not be quite on the same level of that, but it certainly is great. And you know, Ryan is if he's not a genius, he's definitely borderline, because he's really smart. He's really good at taking things from the abstract and making them tangible and practical and implementable in your business. So I really like working with people like that.
Cool. Nice. Next question is, what would you tell the 18-year-old version of yourself?
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to the three things before, right? But I'd probably have a few choice words in there that the FCC would fine me for. But first I would say, ask the girl out, you fool. You know, I mean, my gosh, how many times would I have told myself just to ask her out? What's the worst she's going to say? No, right? You know, but no joking aside, I mean, I would, you know, I think when I look back, I had some dreams that I didn't pursue because they weren't, you know, practical. They weren't the safe approach. And you know, what are the odds that you're really going to succeed in doing that? You know, I think I would tell myself, don't listen to that garbage. Don't listen to that. You know, your life, you've got plenty of time to go after every single dream of yours. And so what if you fall flat on your face in that pursuit? You get back up and you keep going. And I think that one of the big things I've learned is that you don't develop confidence from succeeding. You develop confidence from failing. Because when you fail and you realize, holy cow, I just tried this thing and I totally bombed it. And, you know, I got up on stage in front of the world and I fell flat on my face. And you know what? You lived. And you got up and you went on the next day. And when you do that, that breeds confidence to say, hey, I can try something else again. What's the worst that's going to happen? You know, and so I would just kind of go back and tell myself, you know, whatever that dream is, pursue it, go after it, no matter what age, no matter when it hits you, you know, don't listen to that gremlin inside that says, who are you to think you can do it? And I think I would give myself that Marianne Williamson quote of, you know, that your greatest fear isn't that, you know, that I can't remember it right off hand, but you know what I'm talking about, that your greatest fear isn't, our greatest fear isn't that we are whatever it is, the diminishing or whatever, but that our greatest fear is that we have that light inside us, that magnificence that we can shine. And we ask ourselves, you know, who are we to be, you know, awesome, basically. And the real question is, who are we not to be, you know? And I think I would have just told myself to go after those dreams, but also to really engage in growing myself. I mean, I was, you know, a typical kid that even when I started getting into stuff like John Maxwell stuff a few years ago, I looked at it like Owen Wilson in Wedding Crashers. You know, I was like, oh, I'm hanging on my last thread reading Don't Kill Myself books here, you know? And I thought that was what the whole genre of self-growth was like people who were like, you know, ready to kill themselves and needed a some kind of false hope or something. And I, that's what I thought it was. And I was like, I thought it was all BS basically, and come to learn that it is BS, but it's belief system. And so I think I would have told the 18-year-old self, take this stuff seriously and start now. Read these books and read them until you understand them. And, you know, it's funny because I've done that with my nieces. I've given them, you know, graduation presents here. You know, here's Think and Grow Rich. Here's Psycho-Cybernetics. Here's, you know, As a Man Thinketh. Here's, you know, Put Your Dream to the Test. You know, so I think it's those type of things that I would tell myself. And you know, just to go for it. Just the whole, you know, Richard Branson, screw it, let's do it. You know?
What does success mean to you?
I think it really comes back to it's knowing who you are, but it goes one step beyond that, because a lot of people know who they are, but they don't share that. They don't express it. And I think that's the loss. That's the loss to the world is that, you know, kind of like what Marianne says, we each have that light inside of us and we were meant to shine it. I mean, what good is it to know who you are if you're not sharing that with anybody? And I think that to me, success is conquering fear. Success is seeing the fear and doing it anyway and moving forward and just, you know, being who you feel you need to be and answering to yourself in that manner.
Who's the first person that comes to mind when you give that description and why?
That's a good question. You know, I can think of a number. I mean, yeah, it's interesting, right? You know, there's a number of them that come to my mind, and I kind of would like to take a piece of each of them in a way. And it's interesting because there are even people that I don't necessarily want to model, or some of them, in some cases, I don't really even necessarily hold in high regard or like all that much, but like people who are true to themselves and authentic, right? Yeah. Howard Stern comes to mind. You know, here's a guy who's real controversial, but he's, you know, there's this famous clip of where a caller's trying to tell him, you know, how to run his show. And he's like, no, man, it's my show. You know, it's like, and just that authenticity. Howard is like that. Arnold Schwarzenegger. I love how Arnold has been so focused on, you know, as a kid, he was so focused on becoming Mr. He knew his plan. I'm going to become Mr. Olympia, and then I'm going to go into movies. And so, you know, he did that. He became Mr. Olympia, stayed focused and disciplined to achieve that goal, what, 8 times or something like that, and then says, okay, now I'm going to go to stage 2. And he goes into movies. And then he goes into politics, and he's successful in all of them. And, you know, he's certainly not without his flaws, but I admire that. You know, Richard Branson is another great example. I kind of like these people who kind of shake things up a little bit. They're not your, in business especially, they're not your suit and tie wearers. You know, they're your Steve Jobs type, your Richard Bransons, your, you know, the ones who just kind of challenge the status quo and shake things up a bit. That's kind of who I really like, because you can see that authenticity shining through.
Yeah, I would agree. That's nice. I like that. So as we're closing out here, where can people go, or what can they do besides getting in contact with you to move themselves away from owning their job to owning a business?
Sure. So I send out emails. I typically try to get them out daily and Monday through Friday with just short little thoughts or tips on some things that you can apply to your business. That's free. And then I also have a free document, Discover 10 Secrets to Make Your Business More Valuable Than Your Industry Peers. And that's a little different than the 10 drivers of business. It's just a couple different things on that. They kind of touch on that and it's related to it, but it's a little different. And so really kind of the best way to get in touch with me, just go to the website, pentamenti.co. Pentamenti.com is an art gallery, which is really beautiful, but I did the CO. So I did the CO instead, but it's just pentimenti.co. And there you can sign up right on the homepage for the email list, or there's a link for a free gift and you can go get that report and at the same time sign up for the email list. And then you'll kind of get a little bit of information first about really what coaching really is and how I apply it to business coaching. And then at some point you'll have an invitation to talk with me one-on-one or move up a step closer to working together if that's something that interests you. But if not, you're welcome to keep getting the tips, you know, as long as you want. So.
Cool. All right. Well, fun. Definitely. Stefan. Damn it. Well, Stefan. I did that with Zephan. I had Zephan Blacksburg on not too long ago. And yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did it all the time. And my mom's from Germany, so she says Stefan. Yeah, that's how they say it in Germany. And so, you know, growing up, the kids couldn't say that. And so everybody just kind of said Stefan, and that's what I got used to. And then when I was in college and undergrad, for a little bit, a group of my friends were calling me Stefan. And then that kind of took on. I was like, it's too French, you know. So even when I say Stefan, a lot of times people say Steve or Steven or whatever. And I'll usually correct them and say Stefan. And my mom says, if my mom's there, she'll say, I don't even know why you're still not correcting them. You know, I'm like, Mom, nobody says Stefan here. And you know, now at least with Stefan Curry, we got that a little closer. But, you know, then he's going by Steph. And I'm like, no, I don't want that. It was, you know what the worst was, JC, was for a while I was dating a girl named Stephanie. And you want to talk about like how horrible that is, you know, Stefan and Stephanie. And that was just,
no.
Oh gosh. It was horrible.
The Stephs. All right. Well, Stefan, it's been good having you on today and, definitely look forward to, the future things that you're going to be doing here with Pentamenti.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jesse.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Sorry again for that, audio side of mine. But I think, again, that you probably got a good grasp of the conversation. And really, I think, you know, Stefan really had a lot of good stuff to say there. And I know that for me, the term Pentamenti definitely describes what's been going on with New Inceptions this past year. And as much as I fought it at the beginning, you can't help but be yourself when it comes to your business. I mean, Gary Vee is a great example. His background was helping his family in their liquor store, and so he knew quite a bit about wine and ended up making that company from, I think it was like $3 million to over $60 million in revenue over a course of a few years. Now he loves social media and he helps businesses with social media. So, you know, you can't fight with what you're naturally interested in. If you want to connect with Stefan, you can do so all over the web. He's on Facebook, Twitter, of course, LinkedIn. And if you do connect with him, do us both a favor and let him know that you found him on today's show. All of those links, including subscription links to the show, we are available in the show notes, which can be found at newinception.com/session36. The show note extras for this session contain some links that I believe illustrate what Stefan does pretty well. The first one is, in fact, an interview via IllinoisHomepage.net, which features him and his mentee, Martiz. And in this particular interview, they talk about what mentoring can do for youth and why people should get involved. The next couple of selections aren't videos that feature Stefan, but are ones that are totally relevant to what he helps people and companies with.
The first two relate to Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, which you've probably heard of before. And in fact, the first one is a short intro into the book itself and what you can expect from reading it. The next video is a video by Marie Forleo, which you probably have heard of her, explaining that you have to leave the good behind to get the great in your life and business. And it's very, very true. You're just going to have to learn how to, put off the good for the great. Since Stefan and myself are JMT members, I thought I'd bring John Maxwell into the mix as well. In this particular lesson that I picked from John, he discusses the 5 levels of leadership, which I think, there's a post on New Inceptions that relates to this, so I'll be sure to link that as well. But if you're not familiar with John or this particular book of his, I think you'll get a ton from this one teaching. You know, John is one of the best storytellers I know, and you'll find out why from this particular favorite. And be sure to take notes. So, again, I really appreciate you guys listening today. We appreciate the time that you've given us to be with you. And like always, I look forward to spending some time with you again next week. And speaking of which, next week's session will feature someone that I think many of you, especially listening here in Indy, will know of, Eric Deckers. Eric is someone I'd consider to be one of the pioneers of online marketing. For example, he was one of the first people to write anything on using Twitter as a way of getting your business out there. He co-founded a book with Kyle Lacy that was called Twitter Marketing for Dummies, which was released back in 2011. And today, you know, everybody uses Twitter for marketing. And again, he kind of helped pioneer that whole thing. So on top of that one book, he's also co-authored a couple of others since then, one with Kyle Lacy again and another one with Jason Falls. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff coming up in that talk, including where the story behind where those books came from and what's going on since he relocated to Florida, which includes him hanging out at the Kerouac House, which he gets to share a little bit about what that's all about. And really, really cool conversation with Eric Deckers next week. So again, that's pretty much it for this session. Again, be sure to check out the show notes at newinceptions.com/session36. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care, and we'll see you then. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web at newinceptions.com.